This is the Podmatic Podcast for September 2nd, 2015. We're fixing to burst over here because Labor Day is coming. But don't go on strike just yet. The show's a labor of love, and we're just a bunch of scabs who are here to deliver it to you naturally. Yeah. Podcast where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Nieves's baby daddy Jeremy, and joining me today are
Jesse,
Sarah,
Papa Mike,
Amanda.
If you can't tell from the echo, we're recording this episode from underneath Nashville's real estate bubble. There's some cool colors coming in with the sunshine, but something tells me this sucker's going to burst. We'll be recording in impromptu locations until there are no more pre-2014 buildings left in Nashville, or until the children's department renovation is completed, whichever comes first. This week, we're going to celebrate Labor Day a little early, but rather than championing, thanks guys, the lazy American worker, we're going to get pushy with the subject and instead celebrate the kind of labor that results in babies. We're going to skip over the latent and active phases of this process and get right down to fetal expulsion and tell you about the best books, movies, and music to enjoy when your fetus gets kicked out of school.
I can tell that you're a dad.
Time for a pregnant pause.
You got all the terms now.
Yeah, wow.
You want me to start?
Yeah. Hey, Amanda.
Yes, Jeremy.
What's up with you?
Well, sometimes parenthood can be tricky. Oh, gosh. End up getting pregnant at the most inconvenient time of your life, or you wait and wait and wait and wait for that little stick to turn blue without success, month after month. As a result, wishing someone you don't know a happy Mother's Day can result in Mike laughing.
Or Mike being extremely
awkward, as I'm trying not to picture Amanda's home life.
She's just peeing on sticks all the time.
Hey, everybody needs a hobby.
It will change the color this time. I'm with it, so.
So anyway, so Jesus. Sometimes wishing someone you don't know a happy Mother's Day can result in massive sob fest instead of the initial intended goodwill. So please proceed with caution. And I'm glad that Sarah's here today, because most guys probably wouldn't really realize that someone wishing them, they'd be like, okay, whatever, it's Father's Day. Mm-hmm. But like, I think women have that if you're like, oh, I have a Mother's Day, I'm like, I'm not a mother.
Yeah.
Thanks.
That is a different thing.
That. Yeah, I don't know. So, but what's a girl to do when it seems like the stork has completely lost her address? Well, in my thing today, she's going to turn to Amy Poehler, of course. So in the 2008 movie Baby Mama, Tina Fey has an uber-successful career, becoming one of her company's youngest vice presidents. However, like a lot of career women, she's had to sacrifice her family in order to do it. And now she's hearing that biological clock tick louder and louder, and she catches baby fever. But she's single, 37, and without a man, so adoption isn't a good option because of her age, and other scientific workarounds that she tries are unsuccessful. So, as a last-ditch option, on the advice of her highly fertile sister, played by Maura Tierney, she visits a surrogacy service run by Sigourney Weaver. Now, after the whole Ghostbusters dog possession thing with Sigourney Weaver, maybe that wouldn't have been my first choice.
Well, not to mention Alien.
An alien. So I think that I might have been afraid it would have come out after that.
Weird.
No, there is no Dana, only Zool. But anyway, so for the small fee of $100,000, the service mashes Tina's character up with Amy Poehler's white trashish surrogate and her common-law husband, played by Dax Shepard, a.k.a. Mr. Veronica Mars, which I have to get in every podcast.
It's your creep show.
That's right. When Tina comments that it costs more to have someone born than killed, Sigourney explains, well, it takes longer. Of course it does. So Amy agrees to try and have Tina's baby. And when the procedure apparently works, she ends up dumping her husband, common-law husband, and moves into Tina's posh apartment to wait out the gestation period. But in the meantime, Tina meets Greg Kinnear's juice bar owner, and they start dating. Everybody in so far? Okay.
I'm 37, and I want a baby, so I'm pursuing all my options. I met with an adoption attorney who was very encouraging, and I recently began the artificial insemination process. So, with a little bit of luck, I could be pregnant right now. I said too much for a first date, didn't I?
What Kate wanted was a baby.
I just don't like your uterus. Your chances of conceiving are very low.
What she got...
Our surrogate's fee is $100,000.
It costs more to have someone born than to have someone killed.
Takes longer.
Was a baby mama.
When I first thought about Angie carrying someone else's baby, I thought, my wife's got to have sex with someone else's husband to do this? That's
going to
cost you extra. It's out of the question.
Kate, I want you to put your baby inside me. I want to put my baby inside you.
You got you a baby mama? I got two of them.
No, I'm paying her.
You pay the bills. She had a baby. That's called a baby mama.
What kind of food is this for a pregnant woman? What you eat, the baby eats. What you listen to, the baby listens to.
If you listen to DMX, the baby comes out going,
she's crazy. It is like living with a child.
Did you just stick your gum under my coffee table?
I don't know.
You will literally be living with a child soon. You just should get used to it.
What is this all over you? Is that chocolate or poop? Is that chocolate or poop?
It's chocolate.
What if that had been poop?
Universal Pictures presents...
This whole thing is very important to me, and I'm a little bit jealous.
How can you be jealous of me?
You get to experience it while I just watch.
A comedy...
You and I need to go out.
...about putting all your eggs...
You sure getting an early jump on your baby-proofing. But do not worry about a thing. Shouldn't be a problem for anybody over the age of 7.
Great. Ah!
In someone else's basket. That's what I need.
There's something wrong with your toilet.
Tina Fey, Amy Poehler.
Your partner can help you prep for the great stretch of delivery. Massage the area daily to prevent tearing.
Excuse me, can I just spray a little Pam down in that area before the baby comes out?
Baby mama.
Your water is breaking.
I gotta get to the hospital.
Should we clean that up?
No. Somebody will get that.
Now, admittedly, this movie was a little predictable, even with the twist on the actual nature of the baby's parents. But as with Sandra Bullock, I'll pretty much watch anything with Tina Fey, except 30 Rock, which we've already discussed at length on the podcast. Mike's dad.
What a strange
Well, like the most popular.
I know, like it's like her thing.
Yeah. You know the thing you're most famous for?
I really like the Mick Jagger solo records.
I don't like those.
She's the boss.
I only like David Bowie when he was in that Christopher Nolan movie and he played Tesla. Everything else garbage.
It was enjoyable. I feel like I'd seen part of it before. I don't know if I caught part of it on TV. Like, there's a part where she crawls up on the table with her boss Steve Martin, and it's kind of awkward, and because he plays this like really health guru guy, and so I feel like I'd seen that, but I didn't remember the ending. So who knows what I saw? But I would like to say to Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, please keep making movies. Can I be your fan?
I think they did. They got something coming.
Yeah, well, they hosted like a bunch of.
They did the Golden Globes like a
couple years ago. Yeah, I just like them.
They're good together.
In my head, Amy Poehler's character in that movie is now the part of Amy Poehler is now being portrayed by Karen Manning from Orange Is the New Black. She plays Pensatucky.
Oh yeah,
I know who you're talking about, but because
she's like toothless hillbilly shooting out babies.
shooting out babies.
Wow. So cut that, please.
Nope.
Okay, Sarah, what you got?
All right, well, keeping up with the theme of movies. As I said, whenever I heard this is the theme of babies, I had no idea what in the world to talk about. So I just kind of went through all the baby movies I've seen, and my brother kindly reminded me last night of Due Date, and I would talk about that one because I love that movie. But I'm going to go with classics because that's what I like. Well, babies. Seems like every time I turn around, another one of my friends on Facebook is having one. But they're cute and they're adorable and we all love them. So...
Something with passion.
Yes, that's how I feel. Yes,
we have to.
Yes. So I chose two movies to talk about because my favorite baby movie, classic baby movie, unfortunately, is not in our catalog. Yeah, womp womp. I requested that we order another one. And drumroll please, the movie I am referring to is Look Who's Talking.
Yes!
Jeremy was beating that. He's like a psychic. He's across the room.
Jeremy is super excited. Go figure.
I'm sure most of you have seen it, but in case you haven't.
I'm sorry. You're right. That's right.
Yeah, Ted Danson was in Three Men and a Baby.
That's what I was thinking. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
So
I got confused.
Correction. It's just not my favorite. You simply just can't miss Bruce Willis as a baby, or at least a baby with Bruce Willis's voice.
Wow. And Bruce Willis as the voice of Mikey. Right.
Put me back in! Put me back in!
I've seen this movie a million times and can't help but think about any song by the Talking Heads when it comes on the radio. It didn't really make sense to me when I was a child, that entire opening scene, but it all does now. it's Kirstie Alley and John Travolta at their youngest, plenty of humor added in. And as I said, you can't find this movie in our collection, but stay tuned. Hopefully we'll add another one soon. And the other movie I can recommend, drumroll please, we have available at Inglewood is She's Having a Baby.
Kristen, wilt thou have this man to be thy husband?
I will.
Wilt thou, Jefferson, have this woman to be thy wedded wife?
Wilt thou provide her with credit cards and a four-bedroom, two-and-one-half bath home?
Wilt thou listen patiently to long stories about kids' colds, kitchen-tile clothes, shoes, makeup, hair, sore feet, and decorate her sexual covers?
I will.
I pronounce that Kristen and Jefferson are husband and wife.
In every married life, there are certain key phrases that ignite the imagination. What's for dinner tonight, sweetheart?
You don't like fish?
I love fish. It's just a little overwhelming to have
grouper. It's grouper.
What are you going to do with your life?
Question is, what can I do?
You have a BA in mass languages. What was your minor?
Elizabethan poetry.
Let's not fight.
You're not sleeping in this bed.
Oh, really?
Anywhere but in this room or in this bed.
So what do you want me to do, huh? Tell me.
My parents are coming over this evening.
This is good, Jake. You're quite a barbecue chef. What is this? What is this dirt on here?
If I tell you something, will you promise not to get mad?
Okay, I promise I won't be mad.
I stopped taking the pill. Kevin Bacon, Elizabeth McGovern, in a new film by John Hughes.
It's been 48 hours since our last coition. My temperature's optimum. I'm ovulating. I have the pillow set up in the position. You can watch TV if you get bored. Here's to successful fertilization.
She's having a baby.
I've seen it.
Kevin
Bacon
and Elizabeth
McGovern.
Yeah.
Yes. This is all just weird gibberish for me.
I'm 80s movies.
Mike's like, have I got the video games yet?
Yeah, jeez.
See, I only discovered this movie within the last few years when it was shown on some non-cable TV channel, but it features a young pre-Tremors Kevin Bacon and pre-Beetlejuice Alec Baldwin. So picture that youth right there.
That's a handsome man right there.
Picturing Kevin Bacon from Friday the 13th, a movie I have seen.
Yeah. You could play a sick game of 7 Degrees of Kevin Bacon in this movie,
totally.
Pretty much, because it's got Cora, a.k.a. the mom from Downton Abbey, Elizabeth McGovern, as you said.
Oh, of course, yeah, that's I think of her as the lady from She's Having a Baby.
That's how I reference that too, yeah.
I'm like, hey, look, Downton Abbey, that's the lady from She.
And well, when I first started watching Downton Abbey, what do I know that lady from? And then,
that's crazy.
Yeah, age her a little bit, and that's who she is. Yeah. But so the movie itself is somewhat drama-filled, but also hilarious. There's a great scene in the end with Kevin Bacon trying to act out a birth. I love this movie because it's mostly told through Kevin Bacon's eyes as he's writing a book. Oh yeah, and it's a John Hughes film, so that's all the validation. You pretty much need to check it out. In my opinion, that man never wrote or directed a bad movie. Maybe Home Alone 3 and 4.
Baby's Day Out.
Was he involved with Home Alone 3?
I looked it up.
He was?
I think it said he
like a producer
wrote them. He was somehow involved.
This is Brian. John Hughes wrote Home Alone 3 and was given a writer's credit on Home Alone 4 because they used his characters.
Yeah, those
cool pretend.
The majesty of the first Home Alone film makes up for those others. And then also before that, the whatever terror Home Alone unleashed on the world is made up for his work prior. I do too, but I can understand why. I love Home Alone, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is my house and I have to defend it, protect it, or whatever.
Yeah, when I grew up and get married, I'm living alone.
No, yeah.
Hear me?
I have written a Home Alone fan sequel.
You said fan fiction.
I've started a Home Alone script for a sequel that takes place as modern day Kevin McAllister. Cold open on a bathroom, sad dark
like
bathroom.
Like heroin chic Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah, it's Macaulay Culkin.
A gaunt figure stumbles into a bathroom, fumbles with morning ablutions in the bathroom, shaves, and then you see him shaving, the stuff going in the sink, little nicks on his face, but you don't see his face. And then when you finally see his face, he's just staring, sad-eyed, droopy face into the mirror. He puts aftershave on his hands and goes like this, but instead of screaming, he just goes, ugh. That's all I got so far. I wrote that like 5 or 6 years ago.
See.
It's amazing.
There's a joke in The Critic that was like that, where it was like Home Alone 7 or something, where they were like, you know, we like Kevin Home Alone, and he's only 28. And they got like Macaulay Culkin with like stubble and like bloodshot eyes. And he looks in the mirror and he goes, ah, and like a cigarette falls out of his mouth.
Oh, that's very close. That's too close to one. Ah, damn it, The Critic.
Tonight I'll be reviewing Home Alone 5.
We left Kevin home alone, and he's only 23!
Ah! But first, let's start with Arnold Schwarzenegger's latest film, Rabbi P.I.
The Critic.
Genius show.
It was been good. A little topic, I guess.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Name of the game,
yes,
I'm sorry.
Derailing the train, as we get for boss conductor Jerry.
Well, anyway, all I was going to say is, look up those movies. Check out She's Having a Baby. We have it. Look Who's Talking. Hopefully we'll eventually have it.
We do have an album on Hoopla called Look Who's Rapping Now.
Oh,
but I don't think it's
a baby's
I don't
rapping.
Think it's a baby.
Oh,
that would be
really good. Or Bruce Willis rapping.
I want to hear the baby version of like Kanye West.
Jesus walks or whatever. I don't know. I don't know any of the music.
Anyway, Mike.
Oh, well. Straight out of the crib.
I would have said straight out of, like, Mama or something like that.
Straight out of the womb. Straight out of the womb there. Wompton. Jesse wins.
Wompton.
No.
This womb? Okay.
That's quite
anyway,
wompton.
Mike, how are
all
things?
Right, well, I'm going to crawl towards the first trimester of mine.
Wow.
Oh, baby.
Do you even know where babies come from?
The stork.
That's Gah. So amazing.
I think the stork in mine, so.
Yeah. Jeez, you know. When a man and a woman love each other very much, they write the stork. Oh, baby. When this topic was proposed, now I'm going to steal the bit that Sarah said, even though we came up with it, you know, completely independently. Nothing wholesome or nice about babies came to mind. Lately, when I think about babies, all I think of is my high school friends on Facebook clogging my feed with Dakota's first steps and Mackenzie's hashtag spaghetti fail.
Babies galore.
Those are real baby names, too.
Yes,
they're very current. That was
yeah, I tried to be as current, you know. Yeah. I also had Cody with like
there's
you
real
know.
People who are gonna have their feelings.
As they should be. I posted that I'm on a podcast twice or like a year, and they're like, Mike, you're on a podcast?
What's a podcast?
What's a podcast again? I'm trying to get my mom to listen to this,
like
and she's
cereal.
Like, yeah. Cereal is so good. You guys did a podcast?
But you didn't kill that guy. Did you?
Tune in for another 12 episodes to not find out. Where am I? Oh, okay.
First trimester, go.
That came out poorly. Anyway, fortunately, Bill was there to suggest evil baby movies, but unfortunately, the only one that came to mind was Species. And then I was like, hey, what about the J-horror novel Parasite Eve? Ooh, that is very Species-like with a giving birth to a monster scene. With the added bonus of me not having to see or recommend or remember Species. Yay! Ben Kingsley in that movie has killed whatever gravitas he might have had for me. Ugh. See also Prince of Persia. See also his entire filmography since Gandhi. Anywho.
What's that one movie?
Isn't it like Kinky Boots or something? I heard he's like really good and like something.
Lou Hicks would want me to interject and say that the film they are thinking of is Sexy Beast, starring Ben Kingsley.
Anywho, Parasite Eve, written by Hideaki Sena, is about Kiyomi Nagashima, specifically the mitochondria in her cells. Now, this next bit of the paragraph, I've gleaned from 10th grade biology and Wikipedia. So, good luck, guys. Basically,
most of the cells and any organism, including you, are made of parts called organelles that perform different functions, much like internal organs of your greater body. The mitochondria are the powerhouse of your cells because they generate the supply of endosomes and then the triphosphate, or ATP. Well, how about ATP? Some scientists theorize that way back in the day, the single cell organisms, mitochondria, were a separate monocellular organism that merged with another kind and eventually formed into an organelle.
Cool story, bro.
I'm getting there.
This is science. What? I'm learning.
What are you? Are you like? It's like Stephen Hawking and I had a baby.
Like, millions and millions of years. Yeah. Getting there.
Okay.
The novel posits...
Welcome to our world, by the way.
Yeah, jeez. The novel says that it posits that mitochondria share a hive mind called Eve, and it's tired of what it perceives as its subjugation by multicellular organisms. Sometimes it acts out and causes spontaneous human combustion. But near the beginning of the book...
We like that.
Yeah. Fire, good.
Not live until you see a baby explode.
Baby explosions come later. Spoiler alert. Near the beginning of the book, the mitochondria in Kiyomi Nakashima force her to crash her car, putting her in a brain-dead coma. Then the rest of the novel shifts to the perspective of Mariko Anzai, a teenager in need of an organ transplant. I was unaware about the huge social stigma that organ transplantation has in Japan. After she gets a kidney from Kiyomi, Mariko's friends, classmates, and even her teachers, like, shun her. You know, a lot of horror plays with societal anxieties and taboos. I think this may have been one of the reasons for the novel being a huge hit in Japan. Anywho, the kidney starts to mess with her mind. Ooh. Evil kidneys. Meanwhile...
I wish we had an audio representation of the jazz hands.
You gotta do the jazz hands. I like, you know, you gotta emphasize what you're doing.
Brian, please edit in some sparkle noises.
Yes, we need sparkle.
Piano tinkling.
Let's not do...
harp anything. Music.
Yeah, harps. That's what harps sound
like. Ah, jeez. Still off the rails. Meanwhile, the vile mitochondria influenced Kiyomi's husband, Toshiaki, a biology student, into keeping some of her cells in his lab. These cells infest... I'm just going to do random hand noises because that's what the people like.
Incredible.
These cells infest Toshiaki's colleague Sachiko and mutate her to a new creepy, gross life form that, spoiler alert, towards the end of the book gives birth within minutes to a creepy monster baby, ooh, and harbingers the end of the world. Good times. I won't spoil the actual ending, but for a book I liked, I remember laughing at it pretty hard at the very ending because it is ridiculous. Like most popular things in Japan, Parasite Eve was adapted into a manga and an anime, a live-action movie, and a series of video games. Now, this is like, you know, 20 years ago, so the video games are kind of old, but, you know, I've heard they're really good. And over the course of researching this, it was made into a live-action movie. I've got to track that stuff down. Anyway, I need to quit saying that. It's kind of silly, but I had a fun time. Maybe the best war novel I've ever read from Japan. Take that, Ringu. Ugh. The other two Ringu books. A nightmare and not in the good way.
Ooh. We're going to have to start like color commentary. Like he's going like, why is he still waving his hands back and forth?
You know, he's really brought his game today. We're going to have a football show.
No, a lot of people. We should have color commentary.
Wow, you could tell that this was one that Mike slapped together at the last minute.
A lot of people say that the hand motions are unnecessary on an audio-based podcast. You can really hear it in the air.
He's bringing his A-game.
It's a lot of emotion.
Yeah. He's going to get traded to the Fairy Tale podcast.
Children's Story Hour, yeah. Brought to you by Mike and his horror novels.
Wow. Hey, kids. You want to know about biology?
Let's talk about it.
Did you see Creep Show?
I can recommend Creep Show every week.
You could have just talked about Creep Show and talked about the Father's Day thing with his parents.
No, I could have, but you know. Cake. I'll just picture Brian, like, you know, slashing it to like three lines at the end, you know.
He's just banging.
Creep Show is good movie. What do you have, Jeremy? Anyway, yeah, Jesse.
So I'm the only one who's talked so far who has actual children, has gone through this process.
This is true, yes.
Beautiful Dakota and McKinsey.
I can see you being really offended by me making fun of my Facebook friends.
Yeah.
Disgust.
No, it's okay.
Jesse's not your friend on Facebook, so it's okay.
No. I call them Dak and Mac. That's why we named them Dakota and McKinsey.
Jack. See, I call him Mac and Cheese. Poor Dakota. She's so cheesy.
Anyway, so this is a book I read before I had children, and then through both of my wife's pregnancies was like, always very present in my mind as we were going through the process. It's The Fifth Child by Doris Lessing, which is a horror novel of sorts also. It's about the happy couple in England in the 60s. They meet, fall in love, get married pretty quickly. They're drawn together because they're both very conservative, which is sort of unusual in the, like, you know, the Austin Powers 60s London.
Oh boy.
I get. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
Oh baby. Yeah, baby. Yeah.
They get together and they start having children immediately, and they have a brood of 4 wonderful children, and then they kind of get pregnant with their 5th, and they're already sort of judged by everyone because it's unusual at this point to have these large families. But they have their 5th child, they're not sure if they can afford it. And then while she's pregnant with this infant, she can already tell that something is different about this kid. And it almost seems like the fetus is trying to hurt her from the inside, like causing like great pain for her. And finally it's born, and it's just as awful out of the womb as it was in. It's like monstrous and trollish looking, and grows up.
I need to write this down, all right.
Yeah. And just causes all kinds of problems. It's like basically all of their anxieties about everything are in this kid who just terrorizes the world. And then while you're pregnant with it, you're just like, is this what's gonna happen? Are we having the 5th child? Like every time my wife got kicked or something, she's like, is this it? Is this the 5th child? And I still think about it, like, when my kids act up. She read it first and then told me to read it. We read it, like, in college before we even realized we would have, you know, children. And that seemed so distant and far away.
I'm not going to have children
who
don't read
this. Yeah, read it after you have kids. She's a Nobel Prize winner, though.
Yeah, she can screw it. Wow, sounds like it. I love how we went with humor and you guys went dark.
Yeah, they, like, were like,
what we
do? We're naive. We're like, we like.
Well, I could have talked about Knocked Up.
Yeah.
I was trying to
think
that.
Okay, but yeah.
I told my Knocked Up story. You can't see me because this is a podcast, but I often get told that I look a little like Seth Rogen.
Oh,
I have
you
a
do
beard,
look like you.
And I have a big Jewish nose. And I have a beautiful blonde waspy wife also. So we kind of like look like the poster for Knocked Up. And the movie came out while my wife was pregnant with our first child. So we were in the theater. It was totally, we had to sit in the front row. It was so crowded. And we were sitting in the front row at the 100 Oaks movie theater, sitting next to this like row of teenage girls. And then the scene where Seth Rogen and Katherine Heigl like hook up with each other that causes her to be knocked up. The teenage girl sitting next to us. Well, I'm there, and my wife had already been like, you know what, you look just like him. You guys are so cute. I really like that look. And then the teenage girl goes, that's disgusting. Why would a girl like that be with a man that looks like that? It was... Don't bring me down. I was so deflated. And we just felt like it was like our life on the screen, like going through this process. We felt very like... Like, we weren't prepared for having a baby. We were in tune with what was going on in the movie. And it's just... That's
end
so
movie,
disgusting.
You guys are sitting there stoic.
Yeah.
Shut up!
It's a acquired taste.
Go back to school, teens.
There's so much river there.
Hey, everybody. What do we do? Hey, everybody!
Can't get creepy yet!
Yeah!
What do we do? On Tickle My Fancy!
Maybe the library has it. Maybe the library doesn't. But either way, it's tickling our fancy! Amanda?
We could have done that better.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I would like you to imagine if James Bond met Quentin Tarantino. What would that look like?
Like the director or his kind of movie?
Like movie.
Oh.
But see, I no longer have to try to imagine it because I have seen The Kingsman.
Oh.
Secret Service.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Huge IQ. Great performance at school. But you gave up. Drugs. Petty crime. Never had a job. set you on a certain path. But you needn't stay on it.
Who are you?
The man who got you released.
I've never met a tailor before, but I know you ain't one.
Come with me. What do you see? I see a young man with potential. Pull the hook on your left.
Oh, yes. Very nice. What does this do? Electrocute you?
Don't be ridiculous. It's a hand grenade.
Shut up. That is sick.
We are an independent international intelligence agency operating at the highest level of discretion. The Kingsman agents are the new knights.
You are about to embark on the most dangerous job interview in the world.
Felt sorry for the boy, did you? He will find this humiliating.
He's as much Kingsman material as any of them.
We're here to enhance your skills. Test you to limit. You need to solve problems under pressure. Like what to do when one of your group has no parachute.
Interested? Manners maketh man.
I have trouble understanding you people sometimes. You all talk so funny.
What about him? What makes him so special?
Put it back.
So the movie stars Colin Firth, Samuel L. Jackson, and Michael Caine. And at its heart, it is a spy thriller, with Colin and Michael playing the gentleman spies, or the James Bondses, if you will. And their mythology here is going to go back to Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. Each spy has a name of a knight, like Colin is Galahad. And I don't know that, we forgot his real name, but the actor that he plays Merlin is kind of their Q, which I thought was kind of a magician secret. Magic stuff. But unfortunately, our current Lancelot, spoiler alert, dies in the beginning. What's his name?
Mark Strong, I think.
Okay, I liked him. I thought he was a good actor.
He usually plays bad guys. That's why I kept...
Okay, that's what...
That's why I thought he'd do a turn towards the end.
Yeah, nope, he didn't get a chance. He
got that's for the sequel, that. Kingsman 2.
Okay. Perhaps regenerate.
The Kingsman in the
Terminator.
That's right. So now the remaining knights must find his replacement, and here is where we enter Tarantino. The assassin that kills Lancelot slices him in half with her bladed feet, and she looks...
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
But like, she's like that runner guy, that's like the Blade Runner that got in all the trouble in Africa.
Yeah,
like, so she's got feet like that, but they're blades.
They're actual
like
blades, not like, you know, so it's got like points and...
But
like,
I thought she looked like Go-Go.
She did.
Like exactly Go-Go Ivory, like Go-Go from Kill Bill. Yeah.
Not from Waiting for Godot.
Not she Go-Go, like... not Godot.
But then she'd be like invisible and never show
there
up.
There is a Go-Go.
Like, Estragon, wow. Like Go-Go.
You know, they like turn the camera and they come back and somebody's cut in half. It's like, Godot. He's returned.
So Sammy J's character is an American business tycoon who's trying to cure the world of its overpopulation problem by instigating this worldwide culling offensive. So he gives out all these free cell phones and the SIM chip, or the, I don't know, I'm not technological, the chip in it. Like, yeah. He triggers it and they all get mad and start beating the crap out of each other. Mm-hmm. And there's a fabulous scene where Colin Firth kills everyone in a Kentucky church. Sorry,
it is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, also like this racist, like, you know.
It's, yeah, it's just like Doomsday Church.
Yeah,
the song
yeah.
That was playing.
Wait, exactly like your family church.
Yeah,
wait a minute.
It was
I had two snakes, Slytherin and Spicy.
We fried those babies up. So
they're my best friends, apparently.
So, will the Kingsman agent stop him in time? Who gets to be the new Lancelot? Will it be a girl? Thinker.
Lancelady.
The plot line is more Bond. The fight scenes are all Tarantino. You'll have so much fun, your head might just explode.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really what I expected, but it was still a good way to kill 2 hours. Mike?
Yeah.
Was it based on a comic book?
I think so, yeah. I feel like there was a credit at the end.
I think we have it. It's called The Secret Service.
The comic in question is The Secret Service by Mark Miller and Dave Gibbons.
I can see Donald Trump being like the Samuel L. Jackson character.
And I love the list that he had Samuel L. Jackson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
I like Samuel Jackson as a villain too. That's
yeah, he
nice
was a good villain. He was a nice guy, but
this is some serious business.
He was serious.
I'm tired of these Muslims.
Save the screen. World.
As interesting, like class consciousness, like mm-hmm. undertone. I thought it was interesting. Mm-hmm. But anyway. Or any hue, as I keep saying. Today, I thought I'd recommend a movie showing at the Velcro right now called The End of the Tour, starring Jason Segel and Jesse Eisenberg. Eisenberg plays a journalist named David Lipsky, who is doing a story on famed author David Foster Wallace on the last leg of his book tour for Infinite Jest.
When I think of this trip, I see David and me in the front seat of his car. He wants something better than he has. I want precisely what he has already.
David.
Wallace.
Welcome to Minneapolis.
Hi, I'm David Lipsky.
Oh,
how are you?
Hi. Okay, David and David.
We only just met. He's writing a piece on the tour. What's this story about in your mind?
Just what it's like to be the most talked about writer in the country, that sort of thing.
You're like a nervous guy, huh?
No. I'm okay. How are you?
Because I'm terrified.
I gotta ask, what is with the bandana?
I know that it's a security blanket for me whenever I'm kind of afraid my head is going to explode.
If we ate like this all the time, what would be wrong with that?
It's like good, seductive commercial entertainment, like Die Hard.
First Die Hard?
First Die Hard.
Great film.
Yes. No, it's a brilliant
the
film.
The best.
Hey, isn't it reassuring to have a lot of people read you?
I think if a book is about anything,
yeah,
it's about the question of why. Why am I doing it? And what's so American about what I'm doing?
If they're responding to your work and your work is really personal, then reading you is another way of meeting you, isn't that right?
That's so good.
Thank you.
I don't know why you mean to me.
I think that if there's a sort of sadness for people under 45, it has something to do with pleasure and achievement and entertainment. Like a sort of emptiness at the heart of what they thought was going on.
I don't know.
I got a real serious fear of being a certain way. I treasure my regular guyness.
You don't crack open a 1,000-page book because you heard the author is a regular guy. You do it because he's brilliant.
What is with you?
What is with you?
I'm not so sure you want to be me.
Just be a good guy.
The more people think you're really great, the bigger the fear of being a fraud is.
David thought books existed to stop you from feeling lonely. Living those days with him reminded me of what life is like. And the conversation is the best one I ever had.
It's me, talking into the tape recorder. I'm smoking. Having just said I wouldn't smoke, I'm smoking. Just me and your tape recorder.
Now, other than frantically skimming parts of Consider the Lobster, because I don't know about you listeners, but the average checkout period is 21 days, and I don't even glance at most of the books I check out until, say, day 20.
I'm going to make it by 17.
Like when I check out Books Review and it says, like, it's due in 2 months, I'm like, all right, I've got 58 days until I have to care about reading this. And then I renew it, so I get another 2 weeks to not read it.
That's right.
Anyway, I read a lot, but I haven't actually read, you know, anything more substantial by him. I always meant to read Infinite Jest. I remember some sort of feud between you and...
It's my favorite book in writing.
I was gonna say, I feel like, shame on you for mentioning David Foster Wallace when Brian's not here.
Oh, so, yeah.
Like, but he loves talking about
it. He knows how stupid he is.
Oh boy, I love this feud. It's the best. I was meant to read it, but you know, it's over 1,000 pages, so I found it kind of a bit daunting, but I think that maybe I'll read it after this, because it's amazing. Plus, I should also say that some friends of Wallace have come forward saying that the movie may not jive with their memories of him. But overall, the character as portrayed on screen, I found like immensely, like, you know, he's really, you know, funny and smart and articulated struggles about loneliness and depression that I've personally felt for years. that I've never heard of, like, a character in a movie talk about before, which was, like, really, like, you know, cool for me. Eisenberg as Lipsky is really great, too. He's, like, kind of the point of view character, so it's almost like, you know, it's almost like Watson watching Holmes, you know, there's kind of, like, a distance between them. They, like, really want to be, they have qualities of each other that each other wants to have, but they can't and never will, which is, like, kind of, like, an interesting subtext. There's some rivalry in the second half of the film between the two of them that's, like, really fun to watch, and I really want to see it again so I can see if that was actually throughout the entire movie and I wasn't paying attention. Who's never seen me do that before?
What?
As I mumbled, who's never seen me not pay attention to a film before?
You're, like, talking in footnotes.
Let me go off on a 10-page footnote about something.
Please do.
Anyway, what do we got there?
All right, well, keep up with the theme of every time I'm here. Music. Music's always what's tickling my fancy. So, because it's Live on the Green time, I'm just going to highlight one of my favorite bands that's playing this year, Passion Pit. I'll stay till they open the gates. Oh, but yeah. All my life I stay here waiting. Every new year always making me feel as though there's nothing up there but that is a fan, not a fan. We pretty much have all of their CDs available via one CD in our catalog, and Frigo, I believe, has all the rest of them. Now, of course, Cold War Kids are playing tomorrow evening, and the answer is no, you shouldn't miss them either, because they're amazing. I've seen them several times. Always entertaining, especially the bassist. He's usually very melancholy-ish, like up there on the stage. Sort of.
It's like the perfect bassist. That's their job.
Yeah, I was just watching him and listening to the music, and it blends well. So, last opportunity I had to see Passion Pit was at Bonnaroo in 2013, and sadly I missed them because middle of the day I had just seen Of Monsters and Men and managed to get dust in my eye. So the entire performance of Passion Pit was me passed out on a blanket, just not in a bad way, just taking a nap so my eyes could readjust. So I missed all of them, so I'm kind of really glad that they're coming again, and I recommend checking them out if anyone has the opportunity. Jesse?
Right, so I was talking about highbrow stuff. Just sticking with that theme. I just wanted to say, so last night I went to the salon at 615 with Dave Pilkey, author of Captain Underpants.
Oh, that was last night.
Cool.
And it was really, really fun. I took my 7-year-old son, and it was a blast. It really brought a new respect for Dave Pilkey and the Captain Underpants series.
If you can have
we got the latest one. It is like, I'm flipping through it downstairs and I'm like laughing. I'm like, this is amazing.
It's the,
like,
best
I really
title
need to
ever.
Like read some of these.
I've read a couple of them. I actually just checked out the first one to read to my son. We haven't read it yet, but
it's very fun.
They're very fun. There's another series he does about some cavemen from the future or something like that. Duke and Gluck or something.
Yeah.
That one's been a highlight. My son woke me up from a nap to tell me about jokes, which he must have really enjoyed them because that's a risk, waking me up from the one nap I get to take a year.
Did he do Super Diaper Baby?
Super
too?
Diaper
yeah.
Baby. Also, it was a blast. He did a really good job. He talked about, like, growing up with ADHD and how that affected him and inspired him to do what he does now, which meant a lot to my son also to hear that. And it was really a lot of fun. And the salon, I don't get to go to enough salon at 615, so I'm glad I got to go to that one.
Connections.
That's powerful.
Isn't
Connections.
Yeah.
Power metal
version. Yeah. Connections. I can't roll my R's. Amanda, this is not a correction. It is maybe a quibble.
Okay. I'll take it.
In reference to The Imitation Game, you said, like all good movies, it's based on a book. And while that is mostly true,
yeah, that's fair.
I will say that. And I can't think of any good examples, but I will say that there probably are certainly original screenplays that have been produced sometime in the last...
And then they've remade them four times.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, maybe Bill could correct this. Maybe this will be a future correction.
Future Bill correction.
But Sunset Boulevard, I think, was maybe not based on a book. Does anybody know?
No idea.
No?
I believe the team left this factual matter unresolved to antagonize me. Sunset Boulevard was not based on a book.
Well, son of a gun.
Yeah. We should really know that.
Yeah,
fail. Also from Brian, the Lizard King, we received word that The End, which was sampled on the show, that is, all, of course, by The Doors. Most of their discography is available on Hoopla, so you can ride the snake whenever you like. And the clip at the very end, at what I'm now calling Brian's Clip Corner.
I love that corner, usually.
What was that?
Yeah.
Please correct, because I'm like, you know, I know nothing about Jonathan Richman anyway, but
Jonathan
like,
Richman.
Yeah, that guy.
That was Jonathan Richman and John Cale being interviewed on Australian TV in 1983.
Hey, did Gary from Perth send that in?
He did. Gary from Perth sent it in special.
He's like, I think you guys want this.
My real event. My real meal.
You like Jordan Richmond. You go check this out.
John Cale seems like he's on cocaine.
Cocaine.
Foster's a strain for email.
It's not a name.
That makes no sense.
Gary, I'm going to think that every time I see that now, I'm going to think that.
Gary from Perth at fosters.com.
Dot AU.
Dot AU. Oh, that's beautiful. Well, for more information on cocaine and marsupials, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Next week, do you want to drink? Do you want to party? Do any of us actually care about football? Anybody care about
football? Is that what we're talking about next week?
Wow, we're going to do a kickoff to the playoffs, to the game.
This is the Pop-matic Podcast.
Oh, Jesse's here.
Oh, Jesse. Oh.
Time out. Cast adjustment.
Yeah, really.
Hey, sorry, I forgot. That's cool.
We called and you were like, they're like, he's not coming until 9:30. Yeah, we're like, well, we'll see him then.
I called the special collections desk and they're like, nobody here's looking for you. I forgot.
We don't talk to them. No, they're scary.
Nah.
Where we went through.
We just started, so you missed corrections. But
yeah,
that's
you missed
it.
Do you have any corrections? That's great. Okay. All right. We did that. Okay. All right. Go. Maybe should I clap again?
Yeah,
I'm going to clap again.
So what order are we going?
I've been instructed to let the person whose item scores highest on an axis of theme and broad appeal go first.
That sounds like what he does in his head.
It's a flowchart working.
What is everyone talking about?
I was like, why am I going first the past couple of weeks? And it's like, oh, it's because it's broad and people have heard about it.
That's why I usually at the front, too. That's why I'm scoring highest
on an axis of theme and broad appeal.
Well, I've got a J horror novel that no one's heard of.
I'm a movie.
Okay.
Two classic movies.
Okay.
I was going to talk about Doris Lessing.
Okay. So you go last. you want to go first?
I start.
Sarah.
Okay,
that's good. Mike, does that make sense?
Sure.
I'm just here.
Mine made a very popular series of video games. So, you know.
Well, that's okay.
Parasite Eve.
Okay, well, that's probably...
That's why I always go last.
Yeah.
That's why Brian goes last.
Yeah, I was wondering why I went last for a long... You know, I never could tell his method for a while. And I finally
Didn't you work it out that it's always, like, the most... It's newest, then, like, most popular,
yes.
Then...
Yeah.
Most appealing, then Brian's.
Yeah, then Brian's last, because, yeah, who's heard of his stuff?
He knows how stupid he is.
Yeah.